Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LaCane. In the past 3 years, there's been an upsurge in attention to the climate crisis. The recent surge in climate action is being led by young people. This past week, young people led the first ever global climate strike, with millions of people participating from all around the world. Our guest today is one of the young leaders dedicated to climate action. Isa Flores-Jones is a 22-year-old fellow with the Sunrise Movement. Originally from Sacramento, she's now living and working full-time in the Sunrise Philadelphia Movement House. Before coming to Sunrise, Isa coordinated the fossil fuel divestment campaign at Harvard College. Isa Flores-Jones, welcome to All Together Now.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm so excited about you. I've been working on the climate crisis for many years, and it's so exciting to see you and the other young people really mobilizing on this. So, and I know Sunrise Movement has been really in the leadership there. Can you describe for our listeners who may not have heard of it, what is the Sunrise Movement and who's involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Sunrise Movement is a movement led by young people to try to address the climate crisis, giving it the attention that it deserves. And we aim to create millions of good-paying jobs in the process through a program called the Green New Deal. And I think that the movement is both a way to transform our generation's anger and frustration at a lifetime of political inaction on climate. And it really has this policy component, this goal at the end of it, which is to pass a Green New Deal for America, to really be able to provide good paying green jobs for everybody.
Fantastic. That's a great summary of it. And so how many people are involved in the Sunrise Movement? Do you know?
Yeah, so we have, so just 2 years ago, we had eight people who'd founded this movement coming together to plan for what has exploded into what is today 290 hubs across the United States of America. And really tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are united in this movement to address the climate crisis. I think we estimate that around something like 80,000 people have directly participated in one of our actions. And we really sort of reach out to this younger generation, both my generation and Gen Z. And I think we are growing every day. I mean, last week's climate strike really showed that young people care about this issue and are willing to get out there in the streets and to really advocate for political solutions that we need.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we were watching in amazement and cheering on and participating in that climate strike last Friday. Can you describe a little bit from the inside kind of what happened? I know there was like a whole week leading up to it, and describe what exactly happened last week in terms of the climate strike.
Yeah, so it really was a coalitional effort. It definitely wasn't just Sunrise doing the work leading up to that, but a coalition of youth movements came together to create the Youth Climate Strike Coalition. And these groups have been meeting for several months now. They include Zero Hour, Fridays for Future, the Sunrise Movement, and a couple of others. And we've all been thinking about how we can turn a generation's worth of sort of pent-up political frustration and like really what is a lot of anxiety at a lack of movement on this into something that is both sort of like politically spectacular, and that also leads to future organizing. So sorry to track back to your actual question. Last week in the lead up to the strike in Philadelphia, I know that there was a lot of local HUB members gathering and making signs and spending time at these art bills and a lot of time really thinking about visually how we create sort of like a visually powerful movement. And then also organizing teams thinking about the other parts of this, like voter registration, which is one thing that's coming out of this, really an attempt to register young voters, to turn young voters out for progressive candidates who are going to fight for a Green New Deal. And so that this doesn't, I mean, it's a beautiful move when we are all together in the streets, but to turn this really into a wave of political action. So all kinds of stuff was happening last week in the lead up to those strikes.
Yeah, that's really exciting, and I think actually very sophisticated, the work that you're all doing. And thinking back to 10 years ago when there was the movement in terms of the wealth inequality about demonstrations on Wall Street and all of that. And while I supported the energy and focus and philosophy of that movement towards greater economic equality, I was distressed that so much of that energy just kind of got dissipated, kind of the attacks on any internal leadership, the lack of any focus on what the legislation would be that would help actually, you know, the policies that would make the changes that were needed. So I'm absolutely thrilled and impressed with you and your fellow members in Sunrise and the partner organizations that you're savvy enough to know that we need to turn that frustration into action, and that action includes both, you know, the strikes, the demonstrations in the streets, and also policy, you know, the Green New Deal changes in policy that bring us to the changes that we need to address this climate crisis. So why do you think there is that difference, like between the wealth inequality movement that kind of had a spectacular political impression and then kind of faded versus what you're doing, which I think is really building an effective and sustainable movement to deal with the climate crisis? Why are you doing it this way that is, I think, so much more effective, and that didn't happen with the wealth inequality movement?
I mean, I think that everybody who's a part of this movement now, all the young people who I'm working with, have done their reading and really have drawn a lot of learnings from the Occupy movement. And honestly, I think that there is a lot to learn, both in the positives and some challenges and some things to steer away from. And I think that what you mentioned about converting this tangible energy and frustration and anxiety into easy steps for people to take political action. I mean, it's so easy to go. We have series of trainings where young people are able to speak with other folks who give them a sense of community and a sense of, you know, a sense of a space where there is a clear strategy and there is a next step. And it's never just one strike. There's always a follow-up. There's always a and then. There's always a and then, and we're here for you, and we'll be there with you next time. And here's the reason why we're out here together. But I also think it's a little bit different in that what we're all advocating here for is a really inclusive, intersectional platform, right? A Green New Deal encompasses a lot of the economic inequality issues and really is sort of, it's not just a climate platform. To say that it is would be to take up the line that the DNC was using this past summer and say that climate or the environment is a single issue, which it's really not. And I think that one thing that Sunrise has made a central core principle of our organizing is that there really is no single issue crisis, challenge, just like there are no single issue people in the world. The climate crisis is a health issue, is an economic issue. It is a food justice issue. It's all of these things combined. And I think that it can be really hard to work across coalition and to bring everybody into that and to bring everybody to that table. But I think that this is why it's had the broader reach and the sustained momentum, because there's so many people who really have so much to win from a just transition. And I think that that's what is really sustaining us.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's like the climate crisis is not another issue. A climate crisis is an existential threat to the United States and to humanity, and we need to unite together to deal with it. It's actually, I think, kind of a lens through which to see the world and a perspective that will shape what that response is and what do we do about it. It's not just an environmental issue. We can address all the issues that we're facing in addressing the climate crisis. So you've done that beautifully in your work, and the Green New Deal definitely is that big, bold vision of what can happen when we see the connections and the intersectionality among all these issues. How important is the Green New Deal to the work of Sunrise? Is that like the main thing you're working? When that gets passed, you'll feel like that's the first big milestone?
I mean, yes and no. We look to, with this as with everything, we are creating this bold vision of a future before us, and committing ourselves to this idea of what a Green New Deal would be, which is to say that it's not just, I think it's not just one policy that gets passed and then we're completely done with the organizing. We look to the first New Deal in terms of thinking about how we would structure this set of policies, which is what it would take, really. A set of policies to be able to decarbonize our economy and to be able to make this transition by 2030, which is the date that we are calling for. So we see it, as needing to pass a series of plans to be able to deal with every sector of our economy. I think that that involves a number of political steps along the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are working to champion these Green New Deal, essentially allies and advocates, folks running for Congress running for Congress right now. And we are setting out sort of our list of endorsements of people who we want to put into seats of power so that we can really claim back the establishment for ourselves. And of course, that also includes, has to include, the presidency as well. And in the months ahead, our central focus for 2020 is really getting young people out there and, turning out this youth vote, which we see as really central to any kind of action on climate.
Right, absolutely right. And turning out the youth vote can make such a huge difference. I know I was very involved in the 2016 election trying to stop Trump from getting elected and helping elect Democratic women to the House and the Senate. And it was interesting, in the 2016 election, it was about one quarter of the youth who could vote actually did vote. And in the 2018 election, the biggest jump up in voting was among young people, and it went from about a quarter of young voting to about, I think it's 48% that turned out. It was the biggest age group jump up in turnout was among the young people. Do you think the climate crisis had anything to do with that? Why do you think it jumped up then, and what do we need to do to get it from that 48% to even higher?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the climate crisis has had everything to do with the way that young people are reimagining their agency as political actors. And I think that for millions of people across the world, but for hundreds of thousands of people in the United States, actions like the climate strike make them feel as if they do have a place in shaping what this democracy looks like, and do have an ability to elect politicians who will not take fossil fuel money. And I think that as it fills us with a sense of, you know, with all of those emotional descriptors that we were talking about earlier, with the fear and the anxiety, you know, frankly, depression about what this world will look like if we don't take action. I think at the same time, it's also incredibly empowering to think, wait, everybody here has not been acting, and we see this problem, and like it is time for us to take action. I definitely think it's possible for us to see a youth wave of voters in 2020, and I think that just takes a lot of commitment for people, both for organizations like Sunrise, which is committed to that kind of voter turnout and that kind of voter registration, to be concentrating in political priority states and to be going out and, you know, knocking doors and talking to people, and situating ourselves in college campuses, and doing that sort of person-to-person relational work. But I think it also falls on all of the young people I know to really be talking about this as something that we can take individual ownership over. It's something that each of us can think about, you know, how can I be organizing in my community, and how can I be talking to my friends about this crisis to make it not just something that we're apathetic towards, but something that we combat with, you know, fierce urgency and fierce love and fierce dedication to moving one another in 2020, because it's going to take a lot of work. That's definitely true. It will take a lot of work.
Right, absolutely. Well, you've already shown you've got the ability to mobilize huge numbers of people. I mean, the climate strike last week was very impressive. And do you know at this point, like, really how many people participated worldwide, or how many events were there here in the United States?
We had, so the official count worldwide, although it's really hard to estimate around these things, had it in as, I think, 4 million people around the world at these strikes. And here in the United States, I think the official count was something like 600,000 was the number here. Mm-hmm. Although I do think that there's some degree of inaccuracy in those numbers, probably a counting down, because I've spoken to so many friends here presently visiting in New York who were able to come to the strike for an hour and step out for an hour and participate for this time, the time that they had. And I think that those numbers are not counted. And definitely what's not counted is the impact that all of those images have on every single person, young or otherwise, who sees them. It really was a tremendous show of you know, powerful action. And I think something that was also really impressive to me, we have hubs all over the U.S., and so there was 800 actions last week in the United States. But what is so impressive to me is that a lot of the more, a lot of the hubs that haven't seen any kind of big climate action in their city before, last week they had hundreds of people show up. So, for example, my friend who's based in South Bend in Indiana, where he's from, the organizers there were projecting that 50 people would come out to their climate strike. They'd signed up 50 people. 50 people were committed, and they're like, so maybe like 60 were really lucky. They saw 250 people come out in South Bend, Indiana, people who'd maybe never participated in any kind of climate action before, who came out there and listened to folks talk about why Green New Deal was so important, urging Mayor Pete to enact a regional Green New Deal, and who were exposed in a kind of way that they'd never had happened before. And we saw that across the country. And I think that that is change, and it's incremental. And I can tell you right now, there's already a second climate strike coming. We haven't released the date yet, but we're planning for a second escalation, and we are hoping to turn that into yet more registration of people and looping them into our strategy and making it possible for them to take further action beyond a strike in 2020. So I think huge numbers last week, but also really uncountable, immeasurable political impact.
Yeah, it's absolutely stupendous what you've done. And you used the word about wanting to do something that's politically spectacular, and you certainly have already done that, and I know you've got more to come. And I love the fact that you're not thinking of the strike as kind of a one-off major show and then say,
yeah,
okay,
absolutely,
we've made our point, let's go home. It's if you look historically at progressive movements and how they've been effective, it's exactly what you're talking about, which is you do an action and then you build on it, and then you do another action, and you're very strategic about it. I don't know if I know you're there in Pennsylvania with Sunrise Movement. Have you come across George Lakey at all? He's a friend of mine. He's been a guest a couple of times on this radio show. Once about his work on Scandinavian economy and what we have to learn from that in terms of wealth equality, and then another time he came on to talk about his book about civil disobedience and what we have to learn how to build these effective actions over time. And that, I'm sure if you're familiar with his work, that's one of his main points, is you can't win with an action here and an action there, that you need an overall goal, which you do with the Green New Deal legislation and related work, and you need a strategy, and you need a set of actions that build over time. And so have you talked to George Lakey? Is he advising the Sunrise Movement in any way? Have you read his book? What do you think about his work?
Yeah, so I personally have not. George Lakey, I wouldn't call him, I call him a very active supporter and I think mentor to a lot of people in the Philadelphia Sunrise Hub. And I think his strategies have provided a great deal of shaping inspiration, I think, for organizers there. And exactly what you say about not being a single strike or a single action, but there really has to be this escalation and a drumbeat of actions leading up to whatever it is that we're trying to achieve. In this instance, electing members of Congress who will be champions for a Green New Deal, or electing a president who will make that a day one priority. And I think that, organizers or activists draw a lot from his theory of change. I personally have not read his book, so I have to admit to ignorance in terms of his specifics of his strategy. But yeah, in Philadelphia, there's definitely a lot of people who consider him a mentor figure, I definitely say.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I highly recommend his book to you and to our listeners. It's called How We Win by George Leakey, and it is all about exactly what we're talking about, you know, building up that drumbeat of action, building it over time, being clear what you want, you know, what's the demand, and then keep building for it. And you're off to a spectacular start with the strike that you just had. Do you know yet when the next strike is going to be?
So, unfortunately, we're not releasing the strike date just yet, but look out for it. I think there's an official, we're going to be releasing that official date in the coming weeks. And leading up to that, there's a lot of organizing that's happening, a lot of conversations around how to make this an even more politically empowering strike. Because I think that, you know, a lot of people forget or just don't know that when the first New Deal was enacted, you know, it was a series of strikes that really brought about the significant programs and you know, like working protections that came out of that period of history. And it really takes like a series of actions that apply economic pressure as well as social pressure to move our politicians to represent us and you know, like not the industries that would pay them to do otherwise. So this is definitely not the only strike that's going to happen. And yeah, watch out for the next strike date, which we will be releasing. And until then, you can go to sunrisemovement.org for more information.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned about doing not only strikes, but also doing other activities, including voter registration. How are you weaving in this need to register and to vote along with the nonviolent direct action like the strike? So what did you do at the recent strike, if anything, to encourage people to register or vote? Do you have voter registration on site, or how do you weave that in?
Yeah, so at the last strike we had I don't know the actual. We had a system of having people text to a particular number to sign up for a further training by Sunrise, and also sign up to start participating in that registration process. And you know, across a number of priority states, we have field fellows who are going out and who are just actively campaigning on college campuses and are campaigning for progressive candidates in their areas. In Philadelphia, it's Kendra Brooks with the Working Families Party, but also for Congress members as well at federal levels of governance, and who are doing that work. They're just sort of physically signing people up. But in terms of the mass absorption or the mass follow-up in terms of the strike, a lot of it does happen digitally, and a lot of it does happen through these register to vote programs that we encourage people to participate in immediately following the strike action. So our strategy is kind of come out into the streets with us, participate in this huge overwhelming action, and then immediately afterwards, your social media and the ways that you connect to sort of the visible face of the movement is then flooded with this call for you to take action in these other ways. And we have a sort of more comprehensive program that we're also about to launch in a couple days' time, and I can't talk about it until then, but we are also moving into increased voter turnout, and really building up this electorate to make it the biggest that we've ever seen.
Fantastic.
But it's definitely sort of, yeah.
So when you do the call to action and encouraging people to register and to vote, are you focused exclusively on young people in the college campuses and so forth, or are you kind of looking more broadly at the general population as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are definitely, so for example, with the climate strike, we teamed up with, in Philadelphia, teamed up with Indivisible Philadelphia to have on the site registration happen. And that's for anybody who's attending the event, for anybody who's there physically. And clearly, you know, we're trying to register everybody who can vote to do so. But I think that because our events are, because what we really are focusing on and trying to build out is this youth movement of people who are concerned about the climate crisis. And really a lot of people who have been formerly apathetic about action on the climate crisis. I think we're really trying to grow this sense of political action for a lot of people who haven't felt that previously. And so we are on college campuses across the country, and not just at college campuses, but at other community events. They're physically trying to bring people who maybe haven't ever taken this action before in their lives to do it. Potentially for the first time in 2020. So yeah, I'd say in answer to your question, we are focusing on the youth vote because we are young people trying to organize other young people for this action. But at the same time, we are a multi-generational movement and I think really are trying to urge everybody to take action and participate.
Well, that's fantastic. Love to hear that. I'm sure you're aware that in the 2016 election, Trump got about one quarter of the vote, and Hillary Clinton got about one quarter plus 3 million of the vote, and about half the people who were eligible to vote didn't bother. So, you know, there's so much angst, and I've worked on campaigns for decades trying to elect progressive people to make the strong and bold changes that we need. And it can be very frustrating working on the campaigns. You're trying to get one voter at a time because every vote really can matter. And we see it time after time. But people feel like, oh, my vote doesn't matter. But you're showing very much that your vote does matter. And if you and the Sunrise Movement colleagues that you've got can even lift up the youth vote by 5%, then we can have a dramatic impact on elections. So I'm glad you recognize that, and I'm thrilled that you're really working actively with a focus on the youth, but also including others who might not be active, which is about half of the potential voters in the country don't bother to vote. So thank you for that full-on intergenerational outreach.
Yeah, completely. And I think that there's also, right, when I talked about it being sort of a multi-generational movement, an intersectional movement, it's also recognizing that there are a lot of reasons why there's a lot of space that we can provide for people to feel empowered to take this particular action, for people to feel empowered to participate in nonviolent civil disobedience, for people to, you know, step into these roles that they haven't participated in before. And also recognizing that we are in this ecosystem where voter suppression does exist as well, and that we really feel as if we have to do an extra, sort of like an extra push in terms of the youth that we can work with and who, or rather, that we really do have to push where sort of we are able to in the relationships that we do have on college campuses and off, because we recognize that this is a tremendously flawed system that we do operate in. And so we combine this knowledge of the systemic change and the structural change that we need to make with the immediate reality of needing to get inside this establishment and change it and, you know, create a Green New Deal and millions of good paying jobs.
Right, exactly. great. And well, you talk about the multi-generational, which is really exciting. I love the youth-led multi-generational movement that you've got cooking here. I've talked to some people who have been working for years, who recognize the threat of the climate crisis and the extreme injustice of the wealth inequality and the threats to our democracy. And they may have been working for years or decades on it, but there was not enough push to counteract the influence of the top 1% in their money and the multinational corporations and their power. So you've got other generations feeling the frustration of not being able to make the change, and then try to animate people to get involved, but half people not bothering to vote. And they're now looking at you and your generational colleagues mobilizing this incredible movement and wondering, is there a place for me in this new movement? Or now is it like the young people are so mad at the older people for having screwed everything up so badly that you just want to, say, step aside and get out of the way. We know what needs to be done. Just get out of the way and let us do it. What would you say to older progressives, activists, engaged citizens who feel that way about Sunrise and the youth-led movement?
I mean, first of all, I'd say thank you for all of the incredible work that you've done across your lifetime to fighting against these corporations and against the corporate capture of our democratic system. And that I think that the Sunrise Movement and other youth-led movements right now would not exist without that wealth of information and learnings from the people who've been in this fight for decades, and generations before us. I think that we always turn to the people who've been doing this work. Folks like George Lakey, who do have a lot to share and a lot of wisdom. And I think, and clearly that's not to say, that's not to say, we're doing the thing now. Like, there's no place, because of course there's a place. And I think that place is sort of recognizing that, we're all fighting and engaged in different aspects of this movement. And I think that young people right now have really stumbled upon a really unique window of political opportunity, where we are able to make this message of urgency on the climate crisis heard, really by use of our youth and of the fact that we're able to kind of say, we really need to act now, and kind of the fact that for a lot of people it is kind of to be learning about the extent of the climate crisis for the first time as a young person, and to realize, oh my God, our politicians, our media, our scientists, everybody has known about this. Nobody's done anything. Like, what the heck? Like, what are we doing here? Like, that is a huge awakening to have. And I think that the media in particular have captured that. But it doesn't mean that we don't have a tremendous amount to learn and are not incredibly grateful for all of the leadership that's happening by other people in this movement of all ages. We need everybody in this fight. I think we see the work done by, for example, in terms of politicians who are doing this work, Ed Markey and AOC coming together to present the first version of this resolution. We do see politicians, or I suppose I should say a select few number of champions for the Green New Deal who are there and are doing this work. That was a kind of a rambling answer, but I think, I would say thank you for having created this movement and momentum and place for young people to step in for this moment and articulate why we feel a need for urgent action. And to say also that, you know, I see, like, we see how much other people have also been fighting for this all along, and how much they are continuing to fight for it. So, that was kind of an answer that was all over the place.
No, that was great. Well done. Yeah, I think the bottom line is there's room for everyone. We need everybody in this fight to win, and you're building on the work that others have done, and you're bringing a unique perspective of a generation who understands the incredible crises you're going to face in your life with the hurricanes, the floods, the heat, the deaths of the fisheries, and all the rest of it that we're seeing some of the beginnings of now is we know is going to intensify. So you've got the most at stake. So good for you all for not being paralyzed by the fear and anger at what's coming, but rather to turn that into action. And someone who's even younger than you, the 16-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden, has turned into one of the outstanding leaders for climate action. What do you think of Greta Thunberg?
I think it's absolutely amazing what Greta has done in terms of mobilizing millions of people to be vocal about the climate crisis. But I think that there is a second step that's needed. I think that Greta has called a lot of people out of ignorance and out of apathy and out of feeling as if they could really do nothing, has called a lot of people into this state of reckoning. You know, her statement, our house is burning, your house is on fire. It is so true. And I can also imagine that a lot of people have been feeling this way for their entire lives, have been feeling as if their house is on fire, have been, you know, for example, in Philadelphia, have been living with the Philadelphia oil refinery in their backyard, and have been breathing that air, and you know, have been feeling that their entire lives, and have been carrying that in their bodies. And so I think it's incredible that she's bringing this message to millions of people, and I think that this creates a political opportunity for us to work together with strategy to be able to turn this message of, you know, listen to the scientists, like wake up, into act now. And I think that that's where I'm really, really grateful for Greta and for the entire Fridays for Future movement, because I think it calls people into a now what? What are we going to do together?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I saw an hour-long interview of Greta on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and I was very moved by it because I've watched Greta's statements to the United Nations and other major bodies, and she usually speaks for a very short time, maybe 3 minutes, but she packs more into 3 minutes than anyone I've ever known. And a really impactful and powerful message and powerful delivery. But it was great to hear the Democracy Now! Interview for an hour. And that's when I learned that Greta is diagnosed as having Asperger's, which she considers a gift because it enables her to be obsessively focused on something, in this case, the climate crisis. And that she herself went into a period of deep depression the more she learned about the threats from the climate crisis. And she was like, oh, my God, the Earth's on fire. And the science is not good. But that she came out of that depression by focusing on taking action. And I think, the more you know about this climate crisis problem, the more scary it can be. The fact that you and others are taking action, I think that's absolutely the antidote, both to the personal depression and the antidote to the fact that our house is on fire and we need to stop these carbon emissions and shift to 100% renewable energy as soon as possible. So this is an interesting story and just an absolutely compelling personality, and in some ways a kind of a face of the movement. But part of what I love about the movement is that there are so many leaders, and that your movement is not afraid of leaders. That you go, you know, I've seen other progressive movements come along and they kind of shoot the leaders, but I think your group is smart enough to know we need leadership. So, what's your sense of the feeling for respect for or hate of leadership within the Sunrise Movement and the climate movement more generally?
So the question was, what is the feeling around leadership?
Like, do you see we need leaders and encouraged to cultivate and nurture leadership, or are people resentful or just don't really want anyone to stand up and kind of try to rotate leadership constantly?
I think that we see a place for empowering every young person as a leader in their particular, you know, in their, whether it be their school, their church, their friend group, in their most immediate community. And I think that often in order for people to feel as if they can take action, they need to see people out there in front who are providing examples of how they can do that. And I think that, Greta has provided a great example of how, you know, a 16-year-old person can cross the ocean and come to the United States and have her words really be heard. I think that that's wonderful. I think that we need more leaders who look like pipeline resistors and who are Indigenous people, who are, you know, people of color from across the United States and from the communities that are being impacted first and foremost by the climate crisis. And I think what is problematic about, or the issue with one leader, is that one leader cannot hope to represent or speak to everybody's individual experience. And so I think that this is why our movement in particular really puts a lot of work into trying to empower individuals from across the United States, from, you know, a vast array of economic and cultural and like racial identities to take part in this fight and in this struggle. Do I think we need leaders in terms of people who are out there in front and articulating, you know, policy? Yeah, absolutely I do. I think that Rhianna Gunn Wright has been a leader, a thought leader for me and for many others who are thinking about how we can implement a just transition, and who's been doing all of the policy research, all of the policy work to really, really imagine what that could be, what a Green New Deal could be. I think for me, I think of leadership in terms of how people are leading the conversation and leading the sharing of knowledge, which I think is super, super important.
Right, exactly. And I've been interested to read about how many more women than men, particularly among the youth, are very concerned about the climate crisis. I was seeing something that's like the young men, you know, about 23% of them are very concerned about the climate crisis. And among the young women, it's double that. It's like 46% are very concerned in a recent Washington Post poll. What's been your experience with, obviously, your young woman leader, Greta Thunberg, who's become a visible face on the movement, is a young woman. What's your experience? Are there more women involved that you're seeing? And if so, why do you think that is so?
I actually was just reading a really interesting piece that talked through this. And I really wish I remember the place it had been published to be able to share that with your listeners. But essentially, this writer, this woman who's a scientist, was writing about how many young women are at the forefront of this movement. And I think it's true that there have always been women in leadership positions, or in silent leadership positions, or I should say there's not always been women in leadership positions. There's always been women doing a lot of the work behind every kind of social reform, every kind of political change. There's been women doing that work, and I think that the reason why we see a lot of young women right now more than in the past is that we're also coming out of this particular moment of, of having these years of sort of openness about women's voices at the forefront. And, I think like a clearing of the way for women to be really here and telling our stories and to be shaping what action on climate, for example, looks like. But I'm also reflecting on a piece from this article as well, in which the very eloquent writer pointed out, women have been here for an age, and women are here right now. And that I think there's also a bit of a problem in the way that we only think about young girls as being sort of, as being like leaders at the front of this movement, when there's also so many older women who are also involved with it, who are leading in various capacities, who are doing so much work, who have been, at the forefront of pipeline resistance and have been acting for their whole lives. And I think that for me has been a real inspiration of drawing inspiration, not just for the young women who are in this movement now, but from the people around me in my life, from, clearly from my mother, but also from people like Dolores Huerta and other, leaders who really represent what a just and sustainable future should be.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was again a ramble and a
no. That was great. That's really great. I think it's the time really for women to step forward and help lead the country and the world into a much better direction. And I'm so glad you're stepping up, and so many of your people in your generation are stepping up. So thank you for that. And so before we go, I want to ask you specifically, what are your goals for 2020, and what are some of the things that our listeners can do to help out with the climate crisis?
Yeah, wow, that's a lot. I think my top line goal for 2020 is electing people who will make a Green New Deal a priority. And when I say a Green New Deal, I mean a jobs and climate plan, a plan that is going to give young people like myself a future, but also is going to secure clean air and clean water for everybody, and make sure that we take advantage. I think that one thing that is unique about the way that a lot of people in this movement are thinking is that this is actually an opportunity. We have the opportunity to be building a clean and sustainable infrastructure, a clean and sustainable way of thinking about our cities and our agriculture, of investing in regenerative practices, agriculture that gives back to the land and to the people, as opposed to exploiting it. And it's an opportunity for us to make something of it. And I guess on a smaller goal or note for 2020, I just want to see hundreds of thousands of young people turning out to vote, is what I would like to see. I don't know what the last part of
what can our listeners do about the climate crisis?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of things that can be done. I think that, I kind of have to make the pitch of saying, you can go to sunrisemovement.org and check out our plans for what's happening next. I think it's advocating for and imagining what this Green New Deal could be, in our lives, in our communities, for one another, for the way that we treat one another. And I think it's not just showing up for protests and for rallies and for strikes, but for engaging with one another and listening to one another and figuring out, you know, what your particular community is doing to elect a progressive candidate into office, for, you know, trying to get out an incumbent Dem who's been taking so much money from the oil industry, as we're trying to do in Texas with supporting the campaign of Jessica Cisneros there, but finding what that is in your particular community and supporting those people. But honestly, I suspect that your listeners have been doing that for a long time. So I guess I just want to say thank you again to them.
That's great. Well, that's all the time we have. I am so grateful to you for being on the show and for all your important work. Isa Flores-Jones, we really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.